fingernails. "Thank you," Artyom retorted, picking up the bundle and pulling Homer towards the exit. "There still might tend you to me," the broker reminded them, scooting out behind. Artyom heard muttering through the door that had slammed, and on the platform they were already expected. Not the sentries in camouflage gear who had led them here. Men in civilian clothes, holding their little security service ID books open. But it was impossible to read anything because it was so dark.
"Security service,"
one of them, a tall man, declared civilly.
"Major Svinolup, Boris Ivanovich, hand over your weapons, please, and the communications equipment. You are under arrest on suspicion of espionage for the Red Line."
Chapter 5. Enemies. The major's office was perfectly cozy and actually looked more like a bachelor apartment. It was clear immediately that the occupant of the office also slept here, one corner closed off with a curtain, with the edge of a bed carelessly covered with a synthetic rug protruding from under the curtain in a rather homely fashion. A moth-eaten carpet with an intricate oriental design, the details of which had begun to disappear. Fitted into another corner was a sumptuous icon, two slim male figures in red, with sad faces and fragile swords in long, delicate fingers. After unlocking the door, the major cast a critical glance round the room, groaned as he gathered up the touching plush house slippers abandoned at opposite ends of the floor, and shoved them under the desk with an embarrassed air.
"I beg your pardon for the shambles. I prepared in a hurry."
Meanwhile, Artyom and the others were jostling in the hallway. When he had tied it up, Boris Ivanovich invited them in. But not everyone.
"A broker?"
he asked Leocha from arm's length away.
"That's right,"
Leocha admitted.
"You wait outside, my friend. We'll talk separately. I eat in this office too, you know. I'm up to my neck in work. The enemy is ever vigilant."
And he cut off the stench with a door, padded and soft, but it gave a metallic clang when it closed.
"Please take a seat on the chair there."
He swept the crumbs off the table, glanced into a hand-painted gazelle mug, and clicked his tongue. Artyom was already wondering if he was actually going to offer them tea, but Boris Ivanovich didn't. He moved aside the brass lamp with the green glass shade so that it wouldn't glare in their eyes. And from out of the cozy twilight he asked,
"Where have you come here from?"
"Exhibition."
"Oh?"
Boris Ivanovich rolled exhibition around on his tongue like a vitamin pill and rubbed his nose, trying to recall.
"What's that your boss is called? Kalyapin, I think. Alexander Nikolaevich, is he managing all right?"
"Kalyapin retired 6 months ago. It's Sukhoi now."
"Sukhoi? Sukhoi? The old security man, right? A colleague?"
the major said delightedly.
"I'm glad for him."
"Affirmative."
"And you're from there yourself, as I understand it."
Svinolop leafed through Artyom's passport.
"What work do you do?"
"Stalker," said Artyom.
"That's what I thought. Well, and you?"
asked Boris Ivanovich, switching to Homer.
"From Sebastopol."
"Now that is interesting. Not the nearest of places. That's Denis... Lord, what is that patronymic of his?"
"Mikhailovich."
"That's right. Denis Mikhailovich. How is he?"
"In good form."
"In good form?
Ha!" Boris Ivanovich winked conspiratorially at Homer.
"Couldn't have put it better. We came across each other once. I have a genuine respect for him. A professional. Yes."
Svinolup glanced into his mug again as if hoping that it would fill itself. Then he cautiously touched his own cheeks. There was something wrong with his cheeks, but in the semi-darkness Artyom simply couldn't make out exactly what. The major's face seemed to have something drawn on it. Was that it? In every other way, his appearance was rather pleasant, tall, with a broad forehead rendered higher by a receding hairline, athletic youthfulness stooped by office work. His eyes glinted warmly and probingly out of the half-shadow. His surname, with the unlikely meaning of swine-beater, was incredibly unsuitable, too insulting for him. He was no common man of the people.
"By the way, you are not a Jew, are you?"
Boris Ivanovich asked Homer.
"No. Why do you ask?"
"No, why do you ask?" the occupant of the office laughed. "I definitely like you. As it happens, I hold your kind in high esteem, unlike many of my colleagues."
"I'm not a Jew. You've seen my passport, anyway. Is it of any importance?"
"Your passport? People forge passports, but I'm not talking about the passport. I'm talking about the condition of your soul. To answer your question, none at all. This isn't the Reich, really and truly."
A pendulum clock rustled its hands on the wall. A simple clock, a piece of glass set in blue plastic. Drawn on its face was what Artyom thought was a shield, and a line of letters with dashes. In the green glow of the table lamp, Artyom read to himself,
"Vechika, NKVD, MGB, KGB, FSK, FSB, SB, CCL.
CCL is the Commonwealth of the Circle Line. Artyom mechanically deciphered the correct title of Hansa.
"A rare item," Boris Ivanovich explained to him. "There are only a couple like it in the entire metro. A connoisseur would understand."
"Do you have any more questions for us?" Artyom asked.
"Of course, quite a lot, in fact. Can you hold your hands out here in the light, palms upward?"
the major asked, without leaving the shadow.
"Ah, thank you. The fingers, will you allow me to touch them? Well, as if I'm shaking your hand. Oops, calluses. And this here is from gunpowder, right? Will you show me your shoulder? Come on, show it to me, the right one. No, no need to get undressed. There you are, a bruise. So clearly you sometimes use an assault rifle, then."
And that was another strange thing. His fingers were damp and a little bit sticky. Only it wasn't sweat clinging to them, but Artyom barely overcame the desire to sniff at his own hands as soon as they were released from the major's clasp. "Stalker," I explained.
"Well, yes, that's right, but stalkers are always in protective suits and gloves, right? You didn't fire all those shots of yours upon the surface, and you, Nikolai Ivanovich,"
he said, addressing Homer by his passport name, feeling neatly at his own temples.
"Hands, if you please. Thank you. Right, here we see an intellectual."
He pondered, kneading them, those fingers of his thick and strong, as if he had been doing something with them that had made them numb and painful. Perhaps he had been charging a whirring pocket torch for a long time. The museum piece clock wound through a certain amount of time, ticking distinctly. Tsk, 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 tsk. No one spoke, allowing the clock to sound clearly. The metal door cut off voices on the outside. If it were not for the discreet and distinct ticks, it would have been as quiet in here as it is for men deafened by an explosion. Then Boris Ivanovich recollected himself.
"May I inquire as to the purpose of your visit to Hansa?"
"Transit," Artyom replied.
"Destination?"
"Teatralnaya."
"Are you aware that the importation of uncertified communications equipment into Hansa territory is prohibited?"
"It never was before."
"Oh, come now. Probably you have simply never tried before, Artyom Alexandrovich."
The sound of his patronymic grated. Sukhoi had got Artyom his first passport, and Sukhoi couldn't have known the name of Artyom's real father. He hadn't even heard the name of Artyom's mother. And although Artyom could have heard it, he didn't remember it. So Uncle Sasha had written himself in, and back then Artyom didn't have the guts to argue with him. So it had stuck. But he had changed the surname afterwards anyway, when Miller got him new documents issued to replace the ones that were damaged.
"And here's another question. You live and work at exhibition, as it says in the stamp, but the passport was issued in Polish. Do you do a lot of traveling? Are you there often?"
"I lived there for a year, working on the side."
"Not at Lenin Library Station, by any chance?"
"At Lenin Library."
"Pretty close to the Red Line?"
"Closer to the actual library."
Svinolov became interested. He started smiling.
And you're going to Tetralnaya because it's closer to the theater, obviously, and not because both transfer stations are on the red line. Don't get me wrong, I'm only being curious. In the line of duty.
Almost. I have a trip to the surface plant at Tetralnaya.
Of course, to use a military-style radio unit. Who are you going to send coded messages to there? The corps du ballet? The corps du ballet.
Listen, Artyom interrupted him. We haven't got anything to do with the Reds. I explained. I'm a stalker. That's clear enough anyway, isn't it? From my face and my hair, I don't even have to turn the light on at night in the John. My bloody pee glows. Yes, right, I have a radio with me. What of it? What if I get stuck there up on the surface? If something tries to eat me, aren't I allowed to call anyone for help?
And is there anyone to call?
Boris Ivanovich asked.
He leaned forward, moved out of the shadow, and it became clear why he was touching his face. It was slashed all over with swollen scratches oozing bloody lymph. One of them ploughed obliquely through his eyebrow and after a break his cheekbone as if someone had been trying to rip out the major's eye. But he had squeezed his eye shut and saved it. That was what was sticking to his fingers. The juice that had oozed out of these scratches, which were quite fresh, not dried out yet. Something had happened to the major only a few minutes before he arrested them.
I had to prepare in a hurry.
Maybe there is, Artyom replied slowly. Should Artyom ask him, what's wrong with your face, Boris Ivanovich? But what would he gain by that? Nothing, except maybe to distract the major for a moment.
Then perhaps you should call them.
Boris Ivanovich smiled. With the scratches it didn't come out too well.
Because that could be handy for you right now. Registered at one station, documents issued at a different one, carrying a firearm with 3 magazines of ammunition, with your prohibited radio equipment. You understand what I'm talking about? This radio of yours? We have good reason to detain you, Artyom Alexandrovich, until things are clarified, so to speak.
Offer reasons. Explain to this man about what he needed the radio for. Artyom himself could make this Vinolup's entire reply to him. In 20 years, no signals, no evidence that anyone else had survived anywhere at all. Who are you trying to fool, Artyom Alexandrovich? The major moved out from behind his bulwark and walked to the center of the room, to trample with his dirty boots the pattern that was turning blind and dark because of age.
And you, Nikolai Ivanovich, for company's sake, perhaps you at least have something to tell me. Not necessarily here, in front of the young man. Nothing has been found in your baggage except for a diary. That is, your cute scribblings can be interpreted in various different ways. Maybe it's a chronicle of bygone years, or maybe you're dashing off a report for the state security services of the Red Line, eh?
Homer pulled his head down into his shoulders and kept his mouth shut. But he didn't forswear Artyom. Svinolup screwed the vice just a little bit tighter.
Well, just as you like. These are difficult times, anxious times. Difficult times require difficult decisions. You understand what I mean?
Artyom searched for an answer down there on the bald carpet. The melancholy plush slippers peeped out from under the desk. They somehow didn't belong in this office. Too small for Boris Ivanovich with his immense boots. A woman's?
And it might be possible that you have some explanation for all of this, but I don't know it yet, do I? Put yourself in my position. I have to invent my own hypothesis. And so far, my hypothesis is shaping up this way.
He had to prepare in a hurry. Didn't have time to tidy away the slippers. His face is lacerated and bloody. Who did that to him, Artyom wondered, instead of thinking how to exculpate himself. A woman, with her nails, his entire face. She had tried to scratch his eyes out. It wasn't a game. What had he done to her?
You, comrades, attempted to gain entry to the territory of the hostile state of Hansa by passing border control by means of bribing a public official, for purposes naturally of espionage, or perhaps to prepare a terrorist attack.
What had he done to her? The damned lamp was too sparing with its light, and in the gloom Artyom couldn't tell if the pattern of the carpet was intertwined with crimson blotches. The little bachelor apartment looked tidy. No one had fought here, or rolled around on the floor, or knocked over furniture. But those slippers had been lying here, scattered. So she had come here. They had brought her. They slammed the door with that clang, turned the key, the same way they did behind them now.
Hansa has quite a lot of enemies, those who envy us. But that radio set, now... A radio set, smuggled in undeclared and uncertified. What does it mean? It means you're not acting alone. Your intrusion is part of some kind of plan. Someone was intending to coordinate your actions, infiltrate the territory of the Circle, establish arms caches here, possibly find contacts, obtain false documents from them, lie low, wait for the order, and emerge at the appointed time together with the other sleeper agents.
Homer probed Artyom helplessly with his transparent, honest eyes. But Artyom didn't want to answer him. He kept turning blank eyes in his direction, slithering away. Who is she, he wondered. What happened to her?
And the fact that you say nothing means that you have no objections to raise. That is, I have guessed everything correctly, eh?
There wasn't any other way out of the office. One door, padded, muffling any sound. A desk, a clock, a phone, an icon. A bed curtained off in the corner. A bed. Covered with a synthetic rug. What if, on the bed, the curtain is thick, you can't see through it, but behind it, on the bed?
Well?
Artyom opened his mouth, preparing to make a confession. Svinolup gathered himself, lurked in waiting, stopped droning. The Czechist clock dragged out a bit more time. Tsk. Homer filled his lungs up with air, didn't dare to breathe, and no one was breathing anymore. The reason she had tried to blind the Major with her final ounces of strength was because he was killing her. He threw himself on top of her, maybe, and he was strangling her. That curtain, behind it, the covered bed, and right there on the bed, where he sleeps. Dead. But what if she's still alive? Leap across, tear back the curtain, shout, lunge in and fight. No one's breathing. And what if there's nothing there?
Who were you intending to signal? What about? Where from?
The Major was losing patience. Artyom started at him, transfixed. His head filled up with dirty groundwater. It couldn't contain it and was threatening to burst. It hurt. Who is she? Who is that woman? Why was it done to her? He had to do something. He couldn't stay here. And the curtain, was that really any of Artyom's business?
Are you really accusing me of spying, Major? For the Reds?
Artyom rose halfway out of his chair. Svinolup pulled a matte little Makarov pistol out of the air and arranged it beside him on the desk, a broad black pupil staring into Artyom's pupils. But it was too late to retreat. Artyom had to open the padded door. He absolutely had to get out of this cozy little apartment, get out himself, and take the old man out.
So you found calluses on me, did you?
Gunpowder. All right, very well. Let me tell you where the calluses are from. Do you remember the business with the banker last year? You must remember. Do you remember Korbut from the Red Line? You must have known him. He was your colleague. When the Order lost half its soldiers, do you remember? Holding back the Reds, fighting against your enemies, yours, because if they had taken over that banker, and we asked for help from you, from your Hansa, remember? When we thought everything was over, but apparently you bastards had all your forces occupied on the invisible front. That's where I got my calluses. From the same place where Miller got his wheelchair.
Roll up your sleeve,
the Major told him in a changed voice. Screwing up his face, Artyom rolled up his sleeve.
If not we, then who?
The tattoo had already turned grey.
"Well, at least now the business with the passport has been cleared up."
Boris Ivanovich cleared his throat.
"Any more questions for us?" "You shouldn't act so jumpy with me. It so happens that I had good grounds to hold you here until things were clarified. Perhaps you don't know, but at this moment we're on the verge of declaring a state of emergency. Only last week, 15 agents of the Red Line were exposed and neutralized. Spies, saboteurs, and terrorists. The Order, of course, is busy with other things. I understand. But your Order, greatly as I respect it, doesn't have a clue about counterintelligence. Maybe it seems to you that the future of the entire planet lies in your hands alone. You probably think that the peace and stability of Hansa can be taken for granted, right? But what if I tell you that only yesterday we caught a little man who had obtained access to our water supply system? And they confiscated 20 kilos of rat poison from him. Do you know how agonizingly people die from rat poison? Or that happy-go-lucky shit-shifter who looked just like your little friend carried an anti-tank mine into Belorussia in his barrel. Do you know that? If it was put in the right place, can you imagine what would happen? And that's just the saboteurs. We catch agents by the bunch, propagandists. They start by whining that we don't have any justice here, that the rich are getting richer and the poor are getting poorer, that Hansa, so they say, is stifling business, or that the working man's life is unendurable throughout the entire metro because Hansa's sucking the juice out of everyone. And then there are the leaflets. There now.
He laid out in front of Artyom a piece of grey paper, on which the map of the metro was shown as a cobweb. Sitting in the center was a fat spider. Written on the spider was Hansa.
"And on the other side, turn it over. Pass it on to a comrade, or come to the meeting. So there now. They're setting up cells. Now do we understand? They're preparing a revolution right under our very noses. Get it? Day and night. Have you ever been there? I'm afraid to ask. Do you realize what's in store for us, if it comes to the worst? They won't even bother to waste bullets on us. They'll just beat us to death with metal rods, and the ones they coerce into happiness will end up eating each other. And then on ration cards. There. We'll have Soviet power. And what can you do against the popular rebellion? How many men does the Order have left? 30? 40? Oh, sure, you're an elite force, sure, you're heroes, sure. If not you, then who? Who? But against a crowd that rabble-rousers have incited and wound up? What will you do then? Will you fire at the women? At the kids? Eh? No, my friend. Maybe you understand the tactics of close combat or how to storm reinforced targets, but there's more to life than just that. Do you know how many different situations there are in life? Tsk, tsk,
tsk. Boris Ivanovich clasped his hands together. That seemed to remind him of something, and he stared at his fingers, thick and strong, thoughtfully. Then he touched his cheek again.
"Why are you going to Teatralnaya?"
he asked again, calmly.
"And who's this with you?"
He nodded to Homer.
"I'm carrying out a mission for Miller,"
Artyom replied.
"If you want to contact him and ask, I'm not authorized. The old man is my guide. We're on our way to Pavlets."
Homer started blinking. He heard Miller mentioned. He remembered where Miller had really sent Artyom. Crazy. But he didn't know everything. The tattoo was still there, but if anyone told Miller that Artyom was still serving in the Order, if anyone really did pick up that angular handset and asked to be connected with Miller...
"The old man's guiding you,"
the Major drawled absent-mindedly and laughed.
"Good for Granddad. And what about the broker?"
"The broker's with us."
"He was with you. Now he'll be with us. He was the one who got you through the cordon and made the bargain, wasn't he? In violation of the phytosanitary quarantine. After all, someone gave a bribe to an official of the Commonwealth of the Circle Line, didn't they? To coin a phrase, if not you, then who?"
"No." Artyom shook his head. "The broker's with us." Svinolup didn't hear anything.
"So the broker will have to spend a bit of time here with us,"
and I'll send you to Novoslobodskaya by public transport.
The shortest route. And that'll be a weight off my mind.
Homer gave Artyom a sideways squint. But Artyom couldn't leave that fatuous young guy here. Not to Boris Ivanovich. Not in these worrying, difficult times. You let everyone go. Or let's call Miller. Svinolup drummed his fingers on the desk, spun the heavy little Makarov like a top, clenched and unclenched his fist.
"Why are you trying to intimidate me with Miller?" he said eventually. "He'll understand me. Miller's an officer, and I'm an officer. It will just be stupid. We've got common enemies. We have to fight together, shoulder to shoulder. You in your way, me in my way. We defend the Metro against chaos, preserve it from a bloodbath, each as best as he can."
It was hot, suffocating. Murky water was pounding at Artyom's ears. Suffocating. The thought span round in his head. The curtained-off bed in the corner. The slippers under the desk. Just grab hold of that cursed curtain. Open it. "You let everyone go," Artyom repeated. "All three of us."
"To Novoslobodskaya. My stretch. After that it's someone else's, and I don't want to explain to all and sundry about you and about the broker and about your Miller. Someone's bound to snitch on me to my bosses. They'll torture me to death with memorandums."
"Right now," Artyom pressed him.
"Right now for him." Tsk, tsk,
tsk. The saints in the corner whispered, conferring. Both their swords were naked and ready. Homer tried to wipe the sweat off his bald forehead with the back of his hand, but there was too much to wipe it all off. Eventually, Boris Ivanovich picked up the receiver of the flat keypad phone.
"Agapov, get the broker to the door." "Yes, that's all I have to say."
"What? What about Leonov?"
"Well, give it to him. Work must be paid." "Yes, especially him. A God-given talent for fantasy, and especially good on the invisible observers." "Spellbinding," he laughed. "Yes, and let me have the broker."
Artyom nudged Homer on the shoulder. "We're leaving." Homer started getting up, but slowly, as if he had gotten snagged on something. "Give us back our things," said Artyom.
"At the border,"
Boris Ivanovich promised, turning serious.
"Or else you can still run for it and hide. We never did clarify the details of your mission. Don't worry. We'll give everything back at the border."
Before locking the office, he cast a proprietary glance around it. Everything there was in order. Boris Ivanovich shot a glance into the corner, shuffled his massive boots in front of the sword-bearers in halos, parade drill style, as if facing his commanding officer, and turned out the light. And Artyom looked back over his shoulder one last time, at the curtain. "None of my business," he told himself.
"On the border, somber clouds drift slowly,"
Svinolup started singing quietly under his breath. The Peace Prospect Circle Line station had a face that was quite different from its Siamese twins. The radial line station stared blindly into darkness. The Circle Line station had its eyes screwed up against the bright light. The radial line station was cluttered with stalls, kiosks, heaps of all sorts of junk and consumer crap, and basically it looked like a vagrant bum who had decked himself out in new threads at a garbage tip. The Circle Line station, despite being joined to its twin by the pedestrian passage, had managed to avoid being infected by its lice. The black-and-white checkered floor was scraped and licked spotless. The gilding on the ceiling had been touched up, and the ceiling itself, criss-crossed with an intricate, oblique patterning of lines, although rather soft-smoked, still hinted that it had once been snow-white. Heavy bronze chandeliers with numerous light bulbs hung suspended from it. On each chandelier only one light bulb was lit, but even that was enough to leave not a single dark corner in the station. Part of the platform was allocated to a goods terminal. Beside a crane leaning down to a trolley, Loaders in blue overalls smoked something appetizing and rather pricey. Crates of some kind had formed up in neat, disciplined ranks. A new goods wagon with bales of commodities was arriving out of the tunnel. Profanities jangled vigorously. Work was going on, and life was moving with a swing. The local inhabitants' houses were built in the archways that led onto the platforms, in order not to occupy the central hall and spoil its beauty. The gaps had been bricked off and even plastered in white, and the little entrance doors were on the hall side. Little windows had even been made beside them, facing the chandeliers. Looking through the curtains, you could probably imagine that evening was simply falling outside. And if there was a knock at the door, you could pull back the curtain and look to see who it was before opening the lock. The people here were washed, even dressed up, and no matter how you searched, no way could you trace even a single weak and weedy person in the crowd. If heaven was still possible in this world, Pis Prospekt would definitely be one of its stations. Boris Ivanovich took his leave of them before emerging into the light. He apologized, saying he had to go across to the medical casualty center. A little man with a moustache, decent and ordinary-looking, came out of the office accommodation to replace him and led out the broker, Lyocha. He had a split lip, but that didn't prevent him from smiling.
"You're going to Novoslobodskaya with us," Artyom told him. "And then to Mendeleev."
"Anywhere you say," said Lyocha.
The little man pulled down his washed-out sweater. Not a uniform item, of course, but so congenial, with knitted snowflakes, and after slapping Lyocha on the shoulder, beckoned for all three of them to follow him. From the outside, they looked like four friends walking along the platform. Four friends swapping jokes and smoking at the trolley stop. The celebrated Hansa passenger trolley arrived right on time, a smoking motorized rail car with a passenger carriage attached. The passenger carriage, it's true, was open-topped, but it was conveniently equipped with soft seats ripped out of some metro train. The conductor collected two cartridges from everyone. The sweater paid for the entire group. They sat down, facing each other, swayed, and trundled off. There were almost no more free places. To their left sat a woman with bleached hair and a goiter. To their right was a big-nosed, sullen male individual in a random assortment of clothes. Behind was a sleepy young father, with bags under his eyes and a snuffling little bundle. Then a man with a simply indecent paunch and a dark-haired girl of about 16 in a dress right down to the ground, playing it safe. And then more people, and at the back, just like at the head of the trolley, machine gunners in Kevlar bulletproof vests with titanium helmets on their knees. But they weren't armed guards for Artyom. Even here in Hansa, with its continuous traffic and never-extinguished lighting, tunnels were still tunnels, and all sorts of things could happen in them.
"And he had 20 kilos of rat poison with him,"
the bleached woman continued her conversation from the previous stretch of track.
"They caught him at the last moment."
"They've gone berserk. Rat poison? They should kill that lousy snake with rat poison, make him guzzle it all himself,"
the gut bucket grouched.
"How many of them can we put up with? There's that one who came over from the Reds, you know where, from Sokolniki. He says they're gobbling their own children there already. That there man is the Antichrist, that Moskvin of theirs, and he wants all of us too, Satan."
"Come on, children,"
drawled the sleep-deprived father with bundle.
"No one would eat their own children."
"You don't know much about life,"
the gut bucket grunted.
"Not their own children. No one,"
the other man said stubbornly.
"Well, when they get here, we'll see."
The sweater joined in the conversation.
"It's getting worse and worse, isn't it? What about last year, with the bunker? The order barely held out. What keeps driving them on?"
the woman with the goiter panted.
"They're starving to death, that's what,"
said Gutbucket, rubbing his immense belly.
"It's so they can come swarming over us for you-know-what, to expropriate and share out."
"May the Lord forbid,"
some old womanish individual implored behind them.
But I was on the red line once, where the lines cross, and they don't have anything terrible like that there. Quite civilized. Everyone dressed the same way. They use them to frighten us.
And did you take even one step outside the buffer zone? Well, I did. They grabbed me straight off, twisted my arms, almost put me up against the wall. The facade looks right enough. Ah, yeah.
They don't want to work, the blackguards, said Big Nose. We do everything here with our own labor. 20 years in the galleys. But these, they're like locusts. Of course, they're after new stations now. They've already cleaned out everything in their own. They'll gobble everything down in 2 sittings.
But why should we? What for?
We've only just started living a decent life. If the war hadn't happened, if only...
If they want to, let them devour their own children and not come interfering with us. What do we care about them?
Oh, the Lord forbid, let it not be.
All this time, the trolley was trundling along calmly and unhurriedly, puffing out a light, pleasant smoke. Petrol smelling from Artyom's childhood, along an exemplary stretch of line that was dry, soundless, and illuminated every 100 meters by an energy-saving light bulb. And then suddenly, bang, everything went dark. Right along the tunnel, the little bulbs went out, and it was as if God had fallen asleep.
Break! Break!
The brake squealed. And the goitrous woman, the man with the nose, and all the others went tumbling head over heels across each other, inseparable in the darkness. The infant started mewling, working itself up louder and louder. The father didn't know how to calm it down.
Everyone stay in their places. Don't get down off the trolley.
One torch clicked, lighting up, then another. In the skipping beams they could see the Kevlar warriors bustling awkwardly to pull on their helmets, and saw them getting down reluctantly onto the tracks, cordoning off the passenger trolley, planting themselves between the people and the tunnel.
What? What happened?
Something scrabbled in one Kevlar man's walkie-talkie. He turned away from the civilians and mumbled something in reply. He waited for an order. None came. And without an order, he didn't know what to do, and froze in bewilderment.
What's going on?
Artyom asked too.
Oh, drop it, we're fine here, the sweater replied jauntily. We're in no hurry to get anywhere, are we?
Actually, I'd like...
Leocha hemmed and hawed, sucking on his lip. Homer maintained a tense silence.
I'm in a hurry to get somewhere, said the father of the bundle, getting up. I've got to get this child to its mother. I can't give it the breast myself, can I?
Boys! What are they saying there, at least?
The peroxided woman swayed her goiter in the direction of the soldiers.
Sit down, madam,
one Kevlar vest said firmly.
We're waiting for clarifications.
A minute stretched out like a string, and another. The bundle, uncomforted by its inept father, worked itself up to squealing now. From the front of the trolley, 1,000,000 candles were shone into their eyes, seeking out the source of the crying.
"Shine that light up your ass!" the father shouted. "They can't do a fucking thing. Let the Reds take everything here. Maybe they'll introduce some order, at least. Every day they cut out the lights."
"What are we waiting for?"
someone supported him from the rear.
"Going far, are you?"
there was a note of sympathy in the sweater's voice.
"Culture Park. Half the metro still to go. Aha! Hushabye! Let's move on at walking pace, at least.
We don't run on electricity. Start it up. If we can at least reach a station, then... What if it's sabotage? And what's up with our security service? Where is it when it's needed? The state they've let things get into...
Hasn't started already, has it? Oh, Lord!
At a walking pace, I said, come on, little by little.
This is what we pay our taxes for.
We're awaiting instructions,
a warrior muttered into his walkie-talkie, but it only coughed back at him.
It's definitely sabotage.
And what's that there? Now then, shine the light.
The sweater screwed up his eyes and jabbed his finger into the darkness. One Kevlar soldier aimed his torch where he pointed, at a black hole. Running off from the tunnel into the thickness of the earth was a passage, a narrow little corridor.
What is that, then?
The sweater asked in amazement. A Kevlar man slashed a torch beam across his eyes.
Don't meddle with it, you, he snapped. You never know.
The sweater didn't take offense. He formed his palms into a visor and became invulnerable to the light.
puts you straight in mind of invisible observers. Have you heard that story?
Huh?
You know about Metro 2, that the government, the leaders of that Russia that used to exist before, the Great Russia, that they never went anywhere. They didn't run off. They weren't killed. They didn't escape to the Urals or anywhere.
But I've heard about the Urals. Yamandau there, or whatever it's called. The city under a mountain. And they all went straight off there the moment the commotion started. We can all rot here, but all the top dignitaries, that's where they live.
Bullshit! They never went off and abandoned us. They wouldn't have betrayed us, the people. They're here, in bunkers that are beside us, around us. We're the ones who betrayed them. Forget about them. And they turned away from us. But somewhere here, they're waiting, keeping an eye on us all the same, watching over us, because for them we're like children. Maybe these bunkers of theirs are behind the walls of our stations, and their tunnels, secret ones, are behind the walls of ours. They walk all around us and watch over us, and if we deserve to be saved, then they'll remember us, they'll save us, they'll come out of Metro 2 and save us.
The people on the trolley went quiet, stared at the dark passage into the pitch-black pit, and started whispering together.
But the devil only knows.
This is all fucking bullshit!
Artyom burst out angrily.
Gibberish! I've been in that Metro 2!
And?
And nothing. Empty tunnels. Empty tunnels and a heap of savages who feed on human flesh. That's your observers for you, so sit here and wait. They'll rescue us.
I don't know, the sweater chuckled good-naturedly. I'm not much of a storyteller. You should listen to the guy who laid the whole thing out for me. I really got into it.
Are there really cannibals, then? The father with the bundle asked Artyom. But just then, they turned the light on. In the walkie-talkie, someone mumbled a blessing to the guards. The trolley sneezed. The wheels creaked. They set off. The people released their tight breath, and even the child quieted down. They started drifting past the dark passage and glanced in apprehensively. The passage turned out to be a utility room. A little dead end.
Novoslobodskaya was a single, endless construction site. Standing on the empty tracks was a caravan of trolleys loaded with sacks, probably sand or cement. Workers were lugging bricks, mixing concrete, dripping stiffening mortar onto the floor, plastering over cracks, pumping water off the track. Heating units obtained from somewhere on the surface whirred, propelling hot air onto the damp plasterwork with their blades. A guard in grey had been assigned to each one.
"It's leaking," the sweater explained.
Novoslobodskaya had changed. Once there used to be panels of stained glass here, and the station was kept in slightly dim light so that the glass paintings glowed more brightly. And a double line of upraised gold trim used to run above the stained glass panels, tracing out rounded arches, and the floor had also been laid out in black and white granite squares, as if a passenger was stepping onto a precious chessboard, a gift to the Tsar of Russia from the Shah of Persia. Now there was nothing but cement everywhere.
"Fragile stuff,"
said Homer.
"Eh?"
Artyom turned towards him. The old man had been silent for so long already, it was actually strange to hear him.
"There was someone I used to know. He told me once that the stained glass panels at Novoslobodskaya had burst a long time ago. Fragile stuff. But I'd forgotten. As we were traveling just now, I kept thinking about seeing them."
"Never mind, we'll cope,"
the sweater said confidently.
"We'll save the station. Our fathers could, and so can we. As long as there's no war, we'll cope with it all."
"Probably,"
Homer agreed.
"It's simply a strange feeling. I never liked those stained glass panels, and I didn't like Novoslobodskaya because of those panels. I thought they were in bad taste. But just now, while we were traveling, all the same, I was expecting them."
"Maybe we'll restore the stained glass, too." "That's not likely."
Artyom shook his head.
"Well, if not, screw them."
Lyocha smiled a cracked smile.
"Life goes on, even without them. Where's your way out here?" We'll restore everything, just as long as there isn't a war,
the sweater repeated, slapping Leochar on the shoulder.
He led them to a stairway over the tracks across a narrow isthmus to Mendeleev. They passed one cordon in camouflage gear, then another, and only then did the border loom into view with the brown Hansa circle on standards and a machine gun post.
Leochar kept squirming and spinning about, turning to look back for some reason. His merriment was hysterical. Artyom knew that, not real. Homer glued his lips together and gazed in under his forehead at an invisible cinema screen. The sweater carried on spouting all sorts of optimistic prattle. Languishing at the final checkpoint, in addition to the grey border guards, were another two men dressed as labourers, in stained and smeared overalls and with welding goggles on their foreheads. Artyom's staff was standing at their feet, the bundle with the protective suit and the knapsack with the radio set. They greeted him, unfastened the zip, invited him to check that the automatic and the cartridges, there they were all in place. Count them, if you like. Artyom didn't bother to count them. Right now he simply wanted to get out of here. Get out alive. Nothing else. It's impossible single-handedly to fight their entire security service. All of Hansa. But there, in the room, behind the curtain, there's nothing there. Paranoia.
Right.
The sweater shook Leocha's dirty shoulder blade vigorously and held his hand out to Artyom.
Godspeed!
Looking from the outside, they were four old friends saying goodbye, not knowing when they would see each other again. It was only after they had already stepped into Mendeleev station, when the men in civilian clothes definitely couldn't hear them any more, that Homer took Artyom by the sleeve and whispered,
"You spoke to them in exactly the right way there. We might never have got out of there, you know."
Artyom shrugged.
"I can't stop thinking about one thing,"
Homer went on.
"When we walked into his office, he cleared away slippers that were scattered about, remember?"
"And?"
"Well, they weren't his slippers, were they? Did you notice? A woman's. Those slippers were a woman's. And the scratches..."
"Nonsense," Artyom barked at him. "A lot of garbage."
"A meal of something would be good,"
Leocha declared.
"Who knows when we'll get home now?"
Chapter 6 8 meters.
"There is a one-way road here,"
the commander of the border post told them in farewell, picking at a ripe, juicy pimple on his neck with his fingernail. And then they started wondering where they'd ended up. Mendeleev station turned out to be dimly lit, misty with steam and sopping wet. The steps of the passage from next door Novoslobodskaya ran down not onto granite flooring, but into a lake. People here lived up to their ankles in freezing cold brown water. Artyom unbuttoned his bundle. His waders were in it. He hung the automatic on himself at the same time. Homer was clad in rubber, too. Easy to see he was an experienced traveller.
"I didn't know it had sprung a leak,"
Leocha muttered. Lying here and there in the water were frames cobbled together out of rotten wood, which lifted a person up a little bit above the bottom. They were scattered about haphazardly, and no one made any effort to knock them together into an island or a road.
"Pellets."
Homer recognized them as he dunked himself into the cold murk in order to reach a wooden platform.
"They used to use them in trucks before. The whole area around Moscow was covered in advertising hoardings. Pellets bought, pellets for sale. An entire black market in these pellets. Now just think about it. What damned good did those pellets do anyone? It turns out they were buying them up for the flood."
But even the pellets had long ago become soaked and sunk down a few centimeters. It was only possible to see them through the mud from very close up, and only looking straight down at your feet. From the side it really did look as if everything here was a single, uninterrupted, turbid, biblical sea.
"They walk miraculously here, straight across the water,"
Homer chuckled, looking at the local people paddling along. The broker appreciated the sight, too.
Like it's flooded in shit.
The pupils of their eyes soon forgot how brightly Hansa had shone, and the meager local light became more than enough for them. Oil burned in little bowls, scattered around with whoever happened to have it, sometimes behind screens of plastic bags from shops, with colors that were faded but not completely.
"Kind of like Chinese paper lanterns,"
Homer pointed out.
"Beautiful, eh?"
It looked different to Artyom. In the archways, which at first seemed solid black, they discovered the tracks, but not ordinary tracks, like at other stations. At Mendeleev, no border existed between the platform and the tracks. The murky water made everything look level. You had to guess where you could still stand, and where you would lose your footing and swallow a bitter mouthful. But the main question was, how to move on from here? The exit to the surface was collapsed, sealed off. The pedestrian passage was cut off. The tunnel was flooded neck-high with cold and dirty water. And it was probably radioactive, too. Try bathing in that. Compulsive cramp, a shorted-out torch, and you'd just loiter there, face down, like a float log, until you filled up your lungs. Locals sat along the invisible tracks, scratching themselves, trawling creatures better not thought about out of the depths with nets of some kind and immediately devouring them raw.
"You lured my worm away. Give back my worm, you bastard!"
One fisherman grabbed another by his disheveled locks. They didn't have any boats or any rafts. They couldn't get away from Mendeleev, and they weren't even planning to. But what could Artyom and Homer do?
"Where's everything flooded? Is it lower than Novoslobodskaya, then?" Artyom asked out loud.
8 meters deeper,"
Homer extracted the information from his memory.
"So the water from there all flows here."
The moment they moved a little further away from the steps of the passage, their legs were hung all over with skinny children. They didn't dare to meddle with the Hansa cordon. Somehow they'd been scared off from there.
"Mister, a bullet! Mister, a bullet! Mister, a bullet!"
Skinny but wiry. Uh-oh. You catch someone's little hand in your pocket, slippery, quick, agile. Seems like you've just caught it and there's nothing. And which of the little imps it was, you can't tell. Underground rivers flowed all around the metro, scraped at the concrete, asking to be let into the deep stations. Those who could bailed the water out. They reinforced the walls, pumped out the slurry, dried out the damp. Those who couldn't drowned in silence. At Mendeleev, the people were too lazy either to scoop or to drown. They just carried on in temporary fashion, any old way they could, stole scaffolding pipes from somewhere, partitioned off the hall with them, screwed jungles together out of them, scrambled higher up to the ceiling, and hung there on those metal lianas. The more bashful ones wound plastic bags around their nests so no one could gawk into their life from the outside. The simpler ones did their business loud and clear in front of everyone, straight from the upper tiers into the water. And that was fine. Formerly the hall of Mendeleev Station, solemn and restrained in white marble with spacious rounded archways, was suitable, for instance, for a palace of weddings. But avalanches of mud had sluiced the marble slabs off the walls, short-circuited the electricity, extinguished the artfully twisted chandeliers, and transformed the people into amphibians. It was unlikely that anyone here still married. They simply clambered up a bit higher, in order not to get their backsides wet, and mated in casual haste. Those who weren't trying to catch worms sat on their bunk tiers apathetically and dejectedly. They gaped into the darkness, babbled gibberish, and giggled brainlessly. Apparently there wasn't anything else to do here.
"So what's for chow like?"
Leocha repeated in bewilderment, scrambling from wet to dry, brushing off the little scroungers and looking mournfully at his boots. His persistence set Artyom's stomach rumbling too. They should have eaten at the Prospekt. They had been roasting pork kebabs there, and they could have tipped a few braised mushrooms out into a bowl, but here...
"A bullet, mister!"
Artyom wrapped his arms more tightly round his bundle and shooed the small fry away. Someone's little paw slithered craftily into his pocket again. It found something and twitched. But this time around, Artyom was on the alert. The thief he caught was a little girl, about 6 years old. Hair tangled, every second tooth missing.
"That's it now, you little lass. Give it back. What have you got there?"
He unfolded one finger after another, trying to be angry. The girl seemed to have taken fright, but she tried to be cheeky. She offered to kiss Artyom if he let her go. The thing in her hand was a mushroom. How could a mushroom have got into Artyom's pocket? A raw mushroom from a cultivation plot. What kind of nonsense was this?
"Oh, come on, give us the mushroom, tight bastard, are you?"
the little girl squealed. He guessed. Anya put it there. She had slipped him the mushroom in farewell. "This is you, Artyom. This is who you are and your essential nature, and remember about that in your heroic wanderings. Remember about yourself, and remember about me." "I won't give you it," Artyom said firmly, squeezing the childish hand harder than he had intended.
"That hurts! That hurts, you monster!"
she screeched. Artyom let go of the fingers and released the wolf cub.
"Stop! Wait!"
She was about to swing at him from a distance with some kind of iron bar, but she froze, agreed to hold on for a moment. She still trusted people a little bit then.
"Here!"
He held out two cartridges to her.
"Throw 'em!"
the little girl ordered Artyom.
"You monster! I won't come near you!"
"Well, maybe only a tiny little bit."
"How can we get out of here?" "To Tsvetnoy Boulevard."
"No way!"
She blew her nose in her hand.
"If they want, they'll come and get you."
"Who?"
"They must want to."
Artyom tossed one cartridge into her palm, then the other. She caught the first, but the second plunged into the murk, and three little squirts immediately reached into the mire after it. The little girl smashed her heel into one's nose and another's ear. "Get off, get off, it's mine!" But someone else had already gotten lucky. She didn't start crying in her frustration. She told the lucky devil cold-bloodedly,
"Right, you son of a bitch, I'll get you anyway."
"Listen, girlie," Leocha called to her. "Has anyone here got any kind of chow? Something I won't get poisoned on. Take me there, and I'll toss you another bullet."
She stared at him dubiously, then sniffed.
"Want an egg?"
"A chicken egg?"
"Nah, don't be daft. Of course a chicken egg. At the other end of the village, this guy's got one."
Leocha was delighted, and Artyom also suddenly believed in this egg, boiled with a white like a human eye and a yolk like the sun in children's drawings, fresh and soft. And he was suddenly desperate for an egg like that, or better still, three fried eggs with round yolks all at once, fried in greasy pork fat. They didn't keep chickens at exhibition, and the last time he had tried fried eggs was in Polis, more than a year ago, when the blaze between him and Anya was only just starting to kindle. Artyom put the mushroom greeting away in his inside pocket.
"I'm in," he told Leocha.
"They're going to eat the egg,"
the little girl proclaimed. This news drove the small fry into a fervor. Everyone who had been trying to catch a cartridge from Artyom put his dreams on hold and stopped trying to extort a free handout. Wide-eyed and mute, they clustered around the outsiders. The entire delegation had to jump from pallet to pallet like a brood of chicks to the far end of the platform, to the chicken coop that was hidden there. The children clambered after them over the scaffolding and ran, overtaking them, along the upper tiers, sometimes falling into the swamp with a squeal. The semi-slumbering figures on the bunks watched them go sluggishly and apathetically, feebly trying to untangle their muddled thoughts.
"What say we go down the Solyanka Club today? I read on a poster some shit cool Swedish guy has come over. Electronic vibes. It's your soul he's come for. They're all faggots up there in Sweden. They said so yesterday on the telly. They're zonked on worms,"
the girl explained as she walked along. Left to its own devices, a corpse lay bloating on one of the pallets. Artyom glanced as a rat, holding its little face up high, swam towards it to feed, and he thought out loud, "The difference is only 8 meters, and it's like we've descended into hell."
"Don't shit yourself," Leocha encouraged him. "That means even in hell our lads are there, and they haven't forgotten Russian. Great stuff."
They hopped and skipped all the way to the other end of this cursed little village, right into the dead end.
"Dirt," said the girl, spitting. "Here he is. Let's have my bullet."
"Hey, missus,"
the broker shouted upwards.
"They say you deal in eggs."
"That's right enough."
A matted beard dangled down from above.
"Give me the bullet! Give me the bullet, monster!"
The little girl started getting worked up. Leocha sighed bitterly and grudgingly, but he settled up with their guide. From the bunks around them, this was watched enviously.
"How much?"
"2,
the beard demanded.
2 bullets.
"I could do with a couple and another. Another 3 for my comrades here. You've got the deal of the century shaping up here, brother."
Up above there was shuffling and grunting. A minute later, a little man appeared in front of the visitors, wearing a jacket over his naked body. Private parts covered with a skirt made out of a broad plastic bag slit from below, with the half-effaced inscription, "Aucha," a disheveled beard littered with garbage, eyes blazing like burning fat. In one hand the little man confidently carried, like the Tsar's orb, a symbol of power, a hen's egg smeared with manure. In the other he held gently but securely an emaciated chicken with an oppressed air.
"Oleg,"
the bearded man introduced himself with dignity.
"And is there any discount, Olegic?"
The broker jangled his bag.
"Everything has its price," Oleg said firmly. "An egg costs 2 cartridges.
"All right. Damn you anyway. Give it here. Is it boiled? And another 4. Here you are. 1, 2, 5, 10.
"Don't you do that,"
Oleg shook his head.
"Don't do what?"
"There's only 1 egg. Give me 2 bullets. I don't want anything extra."
"What do you mean, 1? Artyom was flummoxed.
"There's 1 for the whole station. Today. Take it before the others buy it, and it's raw. There's nothing to boil it on here."
"And how do I eat it?"
Leocha scowled.
"Drink it, that's how. Tap it here and drink."
Oleg showed him how.
"But money up front."
"All right. Here are your cartridges. I'm afraid of raw eggs. I was flat on my back for a month once, almost kicked the bucket. I'll boil it somewhere myself."
"No."
Oleg didn't let the egg out of his hands and didn't take the cartridges.
"Drink it here, in front of me, or I won't sell it."
"And why's that, then?"
The broker was astonished.
"I'll tell you why. Ryaba needs calcium. What do you reckon she's supposed to produce a new shell out of?"
The little wolf girl was standing there close by, observing, picking up crumbs of wisdom. Others clambered out of the semi-darkness, preparing for something. Not just children. Grown-ups who lived nearby moved closer, too.
"You what?"
Leocha asked.
"The shell consists of calcium. Did you go to school? To lay a new egg, she needs calcium. Where am I going to get that here? So get it down you and give me back the shell. She'll pick it up and tomorrow you can come back for the second one."
"And 2 cartridges for that?"
"Everything has its price."
Oleg was adamant.
"I'm not ripping people off. I'll buy mushrooms for Yaba with 1 cartridge and some for myself with the other. For a day. And tomorrow, a new egg. It's all calculated. It all works like a Swiss watch. If you don't want to, I'll flog it to the Sonderkommando. They appreciate eggnog all right. Well, will you take it?"
"Flog it to who?"
asked Homer.
"Give that eggnog of yours here,"
Leocha muttered.
"Just you break the shell carefully so it goes inside.
Don't teach your grandmother."
Tap.
"A brilliant break,"
someone whispered respectfully in the crowd that had gathered round.
"Tastes good, eh?"
a little boy with a swollen belly asked enviously.
Now don't you drink it so fast. Stretch it out. Really feel it.
Lyoka was advised by a woman who was barely distinguishable from a man.
The yolk started coming already. Who can see? He does it like he guzzles eggs every day.
Lyoka wasn't bothered by his fans. He didn't notice them.
And you say boil it, an egg's good raw. The white's like liquid glass. The human soul probably looks the same as that,
said Oleg, scratching in his beard. Listen, Paul, Artyom said to him. How do we get out of here?
Where to? What for?
What comes after this? In the Tsvetnoy Boulevard direction.
What's there to catch there? Nothing,
Olezhek declared categorically.
Look here. Let's say, what if...
The broker started pondering loudly, relishing the taste of his smeared egg.
What say you go to collect worms, and every day you put aside one egg, and then you sell 20 all at once to Hansa, and on the earnings you buy yourself a second chicken. Then you'll stop just covering your costs, won't you? In a month you'll be making profit, eh?
And feed her on worms? The chicken's a delicate beast. She'll kick the bucket from worms. Don't you be the damned wise guy with me.
Well, what about waiting for chicks? What if I lent you bullets for a cock?
Lyoka toyed with his remaining cartridges, jingling them.
Or even put up that cock for 50% in our future joint stock company, eh?
At this point, the little wolf girl who had been watching all this without a break couldn't bear the tedium of the honest life any longer. She darted forward, ducked down, and struck the broker's hand from below. The pointed brass cylinders shot up in the air and fell between the boards of the pallet, through the foul muck and onto the bottom. The egg-eating fans became flustered.
"Why, you little shit!"
the broker howled.
"I'll break your lousy fucking neck! Come on, back off, all of you!" "There's your loan for you,"
Olezhek exclaimed in delight.
"Sell myself into slavery? What for?" "Ah, go to hell!"
Lyoka went down on his knees and started raking through the murk in the cold water, trying to ferret out his sunken cartridges. He held the egg he hadn't finished drinking up high in his free hand. The little girl clambered into some unassailable spot, hunkered down among the tattered plastic bags, and probably prayed there to her gutter-snipes god not to let the broker retrieve all the bullets from the bottom. The others, keeping Artyom's automatic in mind, were afraid to go asking for trouble.
"Money doesn't bring happiness," Oleg proclaimed. "A man doesn't need much. What's it to me, one egg or 10? One's exactly enough for me, and 10 of them could give you a twisted bowel. I've always lived this way, and I'll carry on like this."
But at this point, the dastardly god of the down-and-outs took note of the little girl's whisper, tore a hair out of his matted beard, uttered some mumbo-jumbo, and instead of a cartridge, the broker, Lyoka, caught a shard of a bottle with his raking digits. He pulled it out, a cut like an infant's open mouth, puking up black blood.
"Bastards! Bastards, a whole lot of you!"
Lyoka actually shed tears in his fury, crumpled up the cursed egg, and flung it into the darkness. The people were stunned into silence.
"You rat! You stinking reptile! What have you done?"
Olezhek was totally stupefied at how quickly and cruelly the shell crunched and how instantly it sank.
"You rat! You rotten lousy snake! You swine!"
Together with Ryaba, he stepped into the sharp water with his bare feet to look for where the shell had disappeared. There he thought he saw it glowing white, but a hungry rat reached it first, grabbed it and then disappeared, trilling, as it dragged the shell off to somewhere in its own circle of hell. Olezhek was desolated by that. He sat the chicken on a pole and went for the broker, flailing his arms ludicrously. He had spent all these years in the metro and hadn't learned to fight. The broker gave him a short jab to the chin with his left and immediately knocked him over. From the pallet, steeping his beard through the holes in the boards, Oleg mumbled in abject despair.
"My entire life, you lousy swine, my whole life, smashed to pieces, fucking money grabber,
Great know-it-all! What for? Why did you do that to me?
People leaned forward in their agitation. Artyom clicked the safety catch on his automatic and took a firmer grip on it. But no one was in any hurry to intervene for the unfortunate wretch.
There now Oleg's got his too, was the whisper on all sides.
And serve him fucking right.
That's the end of the high life.
Let him be like everyone else now.
Oleg burst into tears.
Over in Anza, there's sand everywhere. They're repairing Novoslobodskaya. Let her pick at the sand.
Homer tried to calm him down.
That way she might even produce another one, on her internal reserves.
Clever Dick! A fat lot you know about the chicken's reserves, and you go to Hansa yourself. They'll sprinkle some sand out for you.
Confused, Leocha squeezed his cut hand with his sound one. The terrifying little mouth in his palm didn't close, and it was clear to everyone that the broker needed urgently right this very moment to get it bathed with alcohol, because with the various sorts of garbage inhabiting this foul, shallow water, Leocha was certain to have gangrene in a day's time.
"Has anyone got any moonshine?"
Artyom shouted to the ragged jungle.
"To rinse a cut!"
They giggled derisively in reply, like monkeys. Moonshine. Ha ha. Rinse a cut.
Look what it's like in here. Half the station totally pissed. You must distill some out of something, don't you?
Even if only out of shit,
Leocha implored.
Ah, they suck the worms,
someone sympathetic explained.
The worms show them trippy movies, but there's no alcohol in them.
They can't do a fucking thing!
The broker flew into a wild rage.
Totally useless!
You go and ask the soldier boys,
someone advised him.
Yes, yes, the soldier boys,
someone else laughed.
That's right,
Artyom took Leocha by the shoulder.
Let's go to the border guards. You'll go back to Hansa. We've still got visas. And that sweater's gone away ages ago. They'll seal you up, and we'll part company.
Where?
Oleg shrieked.
Where's this you're going off to? What about me? What am I going to do?
I'm not going back to them.
The broker dug in his heels.
Where are you going?
Oleg hadn't heard.
You shattered all my calculations.
Right, pal.
Artyom took hold of a clip to click out some consolation for Oleg. But Oleg misunderstood.
Butcher! Executioner! Want to kill me? Well, fire then!
He got up off his knees, grabbed the gun barrel, and jabbed it onto